When you know that you are queer, but your favorite drink is beer, that's gayish. You can bottom without stopping, but you can't stand going shopping, that's gayish. Oh, gayish, you're probably gayish. Well, life's just too short for narrow stereotypes, so it's gayish. We're also gayish. It's gayish with Mike and Kyle.
Hello, everyone in the podcast universe. This is Gayish,
the podcast that's much ado about nuttin'.
Boy, howdy. Yeah, it just everywhere all the time.
Everywhere all the time.
I'm Mike Johnson.
I'm Kyle Getz.
And we're here to bridge the gap between sexuality and actuality. And today...
Today, we're talking about queer spaces.
Speaking of nuttin', we're going to talk about queer spaces. This episode...
God.
This episode is sponsored by Spaces.
Spaces, the app that's so excited to be in very close proximity to the word nuttin' a whole bunch. That's their tagline. We love nuttin'. You probably know their sponsor. They're sponsoring us. They're awesome. And we'll tell you more about them later in the episode.
Yep. But first. Hey, if you're listening to this on Wednesday because you're in Patreon or Thursday because you're a normal human, we're having a happy hour tonight, this evening. Right now, go do it. 6 p.m. Pacific time tonight, we are doing a happy hour pride, and you should come and join us. Grab a cocktail or your favorite non-alcoholic beverage, and let's hang out. It's going
to
be great.
Yeah. So go to Facebook. It is there. The event details are there. You don't have to be in Patreon. You don't have to do anything, but go to. You don't even have to be a member of Facebook. I don't think you could just go to our event, and it's on our page, so find it there or in our group, and anyone and everyone should join.
You don't even have to put pants on if you don't want to.
But be careful.
Just don't stand up.
Do you want to do the news?
Let's do the news.
Shut your mouth hole. It's time for your ear holes. News, news, news.
Shut your mouth hole. It's time for your fuck hole.
Well, no. News the first. So this is a local news story, Kyle.
Ooh.
Yeah. So Seattle Pacific University's interim president, Pete Minharis, is part of the leadership and board of trustees that reaffirmed this year that they will not hire gay people. It is a it's a religious school, and they, as a Christian institution, say that they require their employees to, quote, make behavioral and lifestyle choices consistent with moral integrity, social consciousness, and effective Christian witness. At their commencement ceremony last weekend, over 50 students walked up, grabbed their diploma from him, and put a pride flag in his hand.
I saw that clip. I didn't know that was from a Seattle thing.
Yeah, Seattle Pacific University, right here on the back of Queen Anne.
That's so cute.
Isn't that adorable? I love it.
It was a brilliant protest. It was like, they're not saying anything. They're not even walking out. They're getting to walk on stage, and they're handing him a pride flag. It was perfect. It's beautiful. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's beautiful and perfect, just like you.
Yeah.
But I thought it was amazing. Just like you said, there's a video that's now gone viral, and it shows a montage of all of them like walking up and putting the pride flag in his hand on TikTok. It was the Associated Students of Seattle Pacific was the student group leading the ongoing student sit-in protest over this lifestyle expectations policy. There have been a number of issues involving personnel being harassed or disciplined, and the students have had it. They're just like, fuck this. We're done. So they're doing something about it, and it's adorable.
Nice.
News the second?
Yeah.
Okay, great. News the second. So on Tuesday, the Michigan State Senate blocked a resolution just to recognize that June is Pride Month. Which Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey, who is, drumroll please, a Republican, wanted to remove parts of the resolution that addressed the struggles endured by the Michigan LGBTQ plus community. The resolution would have declared June as Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Pride Month. And the Republican Senator Shirkey, he was trying to add the following language to the bill. Quote, though not every citizen in Michigan agrees with the lifestyle of the LGBT community, it is agreed that every life is special, precious, unique, and loved by the creator, and that each person is created in God's image. He got in a fight with Democrat Senator Jeremy Moss, who is the first out gay person in the Senate who was not having it.
Yeah, like proving why we need Pride Month by your response to Pride Month.
Yeah.
And in the last story, you talked about a Christian school that presumably believes that Christian institutions should be able to do whatever they want and do whatever hateful policies because separation of church and state. But then when it comes to actually separating church and state, he literally tried to add in God to the state thing. You can't have your God and eat him, too.
Yeah. I love those Jesus cookies they gave out during communion. So the thing is, I think that there's real evidence to suggest that the right, at least in this country, is intentionally keeping people stupid because that's the only way that they can continue to wield power, right? Like, there's such blatant double standards in so many of what they say are their fundamental principles that it just blows me away that they can continue to just say these bumper sticker bullshit things and have so many people just believe them.
I don't know if it's every person that's part of the Republican elected officials, but certainly Republican leadership, there is intentionality in certain things like trying to resist higher education or fighting against people being educated,
trying to public education,
trying to resist people voting because mm-hmm. when the public votes and everyone has an equal vote, they lose. Like, certain things they will lose if they do, and it's if people get educated and if people vote. And yep. Those are big things they're trying to block.
Yep. Also the Yakima, we went to Yakima Pride. I grew up in Yakima mm-hmm. County. There's like, it's deep, deep red. If Yakima City Council can pass a resolution saying that June is LGBT month, good job, Yakima Pride, by the way. They posted a bunch of stuff on social media about the effort to get that to happen. Mm-hmm. If the City Council of Yakima can just admit gay people exist and this is their month, like, Michigan, put your pants on. Because, like,
be like everyone should in our Facebook event this Thursday. Put your pants on. At this point, saying June is Pride Month is happening and it's true. And by resisting it, you're actively working to show people how anti-LGBT you are.
Yeah.
And probably doing that too because your voter base, like, you think that's going to help you in the elections.
Yep. Oh, God, dickbags. News the last?
Yeah.
Ending with a happy one.
Happy ending?
Yep. Mabel May Blair, who is the inspiration behind the character All the Way May from the 1992 film A League of Their Own, has come out of the closet at the age of 95.
Damn, girl!
Yeah.
Get it.
There is a Amazon Studios series, also called A League of Their Own, that is supposed to be coming out in August, and it was making the rounds at the Tribeca Film Festival, the Tribeca Festival premiere. She went and talked on a panel because she was a member of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And yeah, she said, quote, I hid for 75, 85 years. And this is actually basically the first time I've ever come out. And yeah, so she's just first adorable. She pitched for the Peoria Red Wings in 1948 and then went on to play for the National Women's Softball League in Chicago during the 1950s. She has been talking for years in support of women's baseball and has appeared on national morning shows and has been honored at baseball stadiums, including Fenway Park in Boston, Wrigley Field in Chicago, Dodger Stadium, Angel Stadium in Los Angeles. She also consulted on the new series, A League of Their Own, because she was fucking there and knows what it was actually like. And welcome. It better late than never, All the Way May.
I think so many of us, and me included, focus on the time we lost. And what do you want today? What do you want tomorrow?
Yeah.
And to just think about that and what do I want from tomorrow and what time I have and going forward? And that can be one of so many choices. So I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Focus on now, focus on tomorrow. Yesterday's gone. Also, she might have been like, I don't know, she might have been eating pussy for 50 years. It's just that she came out, right? It's not
that's true.
You know.
Yeah, maybe she's been a pitcher for longer than we've known. So.
That's my new favorite thing you've ever said, I think.
Oh, I thought it was just grasping for the obvious straws, but thank you.
Yeah. So the new show, A League of Their Own, was created by Broad City's showrunners, Abby Jacobson and Will Graham.
Oh.
And apparently there are lots of queer characters in it, including a black trans character who shows up partway into the series. And I'm actually super excited for this new show. I will probably be watching it, even though it's Amazon. That's the news.
That's the news. Speaking of people we like, even though they're Patreon members. Nope, there was no good segue.
We will continue to like until they're 95.
That's the expiration date on these following people that no, I don't like any of these. Okay. Thank you to Ryan O'Brien.
No. No.
I can't stop it. No, he's heard it all.
No.
He's sighing right now with how much. Stephen Porch. There's a T in there if that's important. Portacha. Julie Rocha or Racha or Roca.
What? Almond Roca? I don't know.
I don't know what that is.
Probably Rocha.
Yeah. Marcel Lapointe.
My favorite ventriloquist.
And Sam.
Just Sam.
Just Sam. Thank you for joining. If you want to join and support us and also get some benefits like episodes a day early, you can go to patreon.com/gayishpodcast.
Do it.
Do you remember what it was like when PrEP came out?
I sure do. Yes, it was a big deal because everybody was like, now we don't have to worry about HIV/AIDS anymore, which is pretty huge for the community.
Yeah. Well, imagine that, but for STIs. Imagine a world where STIs are a thing of the past.
Everyone's been talking about DoxyPep, and that's because it's 90% effective at curbing STIs like chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. You don't want any of those. DoxyPep can make them not happen to you.
And DoxyPep from Shameless Care is one of the places you can get a hold of it. They are a top telemedicine provider with board-certified physicians across all 50 states with one mission, making DoxyPep accessible and affordable.
The process is hassle-free. Answer some medical questions on their HIPAA-compliant online platform, and one of their physicians will prescribe DoxyPep to you. Viola. It's shipped straight to your door in discreet packaging.
It is affordable, just $109 a year, and that covers your online evaluation, the medication, and the shipping.
So ready to rewrite your story? Ready to rediscover the joy of carefree intimacy? Visit shamelesscare.com/gayish and take control of your sexual health.
That's shamelesscare.com/gayish. Your liberation is waiting.
Your liberation. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Mike.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes a lot of energy to do things like record an ad.
Boy, it sure does.
You have to think of a topic. You have to think of something witty to say.
Yeah.
It can be kind of draining sometimes.
Absolutely. And I like being drained, but not in this way.
Life can be draining with more social commitments after the winter. People expect that you're going to hang out, spend more time together, and that can be draining.
Especially in Seattle when the sun starts coming out and that's when all the people in the world come back asking for your time.
Yep.
I need better boundaries, I think.
Yeah. So therapy helps me process what my social life should look like and how I deal with my social battery, how I invest my time and my effort.
Yeah, me too. And it helps me get those boundaries that I was talking about, or at least remember to try to keep them.
Yep. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit betterhelp.com/gayish today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/gayish.
BetterHelp.com/gayish. Do it.
Do it. You want to talk about Queer Spaces, Kyle?
Yeah.
Sponsored by Spaces.
Queer Spaces, sponsored by Spaces, queer.
Oh, wait, I forgot to say this at the top of the show.
Oh.
We're remote this week and probably next week as well because Mama got the Rona. And by Mama, I mean me. I have COVID,
you,
everybody.
You, not your Mama. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I sound gross, that's why. And if we sound weird, it's because we're not in the same room.
I mean, we've done this before. We, as experienced pandemic survivors, podcasters. Okay, yeah. Yeah, hopefully you will hear nothing out of the sorts because I've edited out all of Mike's coughs, sneezes, and farts.
You're masterful at that.
Thank you. I had COVID and had to cut out so many of my sniffs. It was obscene.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about queer spaces. Sorry.
Great.
I'm going to start with the history of queer spaces.
To but surprise of everyone.
I am already... Hey, Kyle. Oh, wait, sorry. I shouldn't say that when you got your mouth full.
Hey.
Oh, wait, of coffee.
Hey, Mike.
I am already prepared for the full body eye roll that is about to happen.
Okay.
We need to calibrate on what we mean by queer spaces. So...
sure.
Great. Yeah, there it is. Because there have been throughout the centuries, I mean centuries, there have been places in which especially butt sex have happened and people know about it, right? Like bathhouses, the concept of a bathhouse, that actually goes back all the way to ancient Greece in the 6th century BC. And
did it mean like, the same thing? Was it like gay dudes butt fucking?
That's the thing. Like, so they were dudes and they were butt fucking and they went there to do that. But they would they would not have used the word gay to identify themselves. And in the case of public bathing spaces in ancient Greece, they were technically co-ed and like gender neutral bathing areas. But like then basically, you know, older dudes would fuck younger dudes and they had their whole thing that we've talked about on the show a million times, but
the like, public spaces were for actual bathing and the men only spaces were for butt fucking.
Exactly.
Oh, right. Just like today.
Yep. So does that count? I don't know, but there is a little bit of like calibration to do, I guess. There were specifically homosexual just for dudes bathhouses by the late 1400s in Florence, Italy. And we know that because the police and organized police is more of a modern thing, but they would monitor homosexual activity and suspect boys. That's in quotes, suspect boys at bathhouses. And we know that there were a bunch of bathhouses that got raided in Paris in the 1800s. So there's the bathhouse part, but that's really just about sex. And I feel like when we talk about queer spaces, like the lens that you and I are going to try to bring to this episode, I think is more about the community aspect, the social aspect of the space, and less about just like, where do you go to bang? Does that...
let's talk about all of it. We, you know, can't retroactively define a thing as something it wasn't, which we, you know, is why you mentioned gay. We can't call it gay. But like, why was that important for them to have bathhouses? Like, to me, that's an interesting thing. Like, why is, you know, sex so commonly associated with gay spaces? And there's a very long history of that being a thing.
Yeah, for the same reason that locker rooms are, I think, right? It's the only place where society says, like, you know, here's a place that like we can't mix the genders, we need everybody to be separate, but like nudity is going to be part of it. And it's like a bathhouse, if you think about it in terms of just bathing, and same with locker rooms, bathing and changing, that's a single gendered space where it's not anymore, but like conceptually single gendered space where everybody gets together and nudity is not only allowed but expected. And especially in a world where there is no media, there's no normalization of a gay identity, that's like the only place to be, right? Like it's sort of the same with restrooms, actually. Like all of the cruising and all of the busting of gay people that happened in public restrooms, it's sort of similar thing where like having your dick out is at least nominally okay there.
Yeah, where can I go to expect to find only dudes?
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so much of that is because any other activity, it was tacitly not okay to do as a group of dudes, which is really funny because then you look at like Victorian times and all these social clubs pop up that are definitely also single gender. But those turns out, are queer AF also in a lot of instances. Sorry, I also have maybe a little bit of COVID brain because like making sentences, word mouth things is hard.
So happy to be recording a podcast today for you all.
Moving forward a little bit from like ancient history to just sort of old history, I want to talk to you about, well, first, hey, Kyle.
Hey, Mike.
What do you think of when I say the word Molly?
Drugs.
Yep. That's what that word has turned into. However, in 18th and 19th century Britain, Molly meant a homosexual.
Oh.
And
oh, did that evolve into drug? Like, is that our strong connection with the drug that it became us and drugs? And
I don't know how it became the drug name, but the word Molly is a pet form of the name Mary.
Oh.
So like Michael is to Mike, Mary is to Molly, which it's not shorter. I don't know why that happened. But it had two main connotations in 18th century English. One was the word Moll that meant a lower class girl or woman. Sometimes that implied that she was a prostitute.
Ooh.
The second was slang for a effeminate, usually gay man. And
also sex worker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm making the mistake of just reading shit. The word Molly appeared in a Swedish-English dictionary in 1762, and the definition was sodomite. And ooh, it didn't have anything to do with effeminacy. It was specifically the butt sex that Molly meant. Anyway.
But like, how many times do we see, I had no idea before we did this podcast, is there some, like, it is female and then it is gay. That's mm-hmm. the order of operations of something.
Yep. Yep. And sometimes that happens quickly, but it's always something gets associated with women or effeminacy, and then it gets attached to gay men.
Yeah,
absolutely. So sodomy, especially for gay dudes, especially for men having sex with men, really became a problem from 1533 onwards, because that's when it got codified as illegal. And then we see these things popping up, especially in Britain, called Molly houses. And a Molly house is basically exactly what it sounds like. There were these houses in which it was just known that is a place that you go to fuck other men.
Ooh.
But that's when you start to see the addition of social aspects to it. It's not merely for the sex. It's also where you hang out and drink and dance and chill out. And that's really when a lot of cultural things start happening. I want to talk to you about like the most famous one.
Most famous Molly house?
The most famous Molly house, which was run by a woman named Margaret Clapp. She was also known as Mother Clapp. And she ran a coffee house that opened in 1724, a short distance from the city of London. And it was a Molly house. She had up to 40 men that would just stay at this massive like tavern in giant house that she ran, and they got to live a gay old life, and she like loved it. She's like the first fag hag. It's really pretty obvious that she, you know, she was making money off of them because they lived there, but like not a lot of money. She was mostly just operating this place so that like these men had a place to be. And it's really,
this is the first sketchy sex house.
Yeah. Aww. Yes, exactly. She was known to have provided, quote, beds in every room of the house, and commonly had 30 or 40 such kind of chaps every night, but more especially on Sunday nights. She was apparently there almost all of the time. It was reported that the only time that she would leave was to run across the street to a local tavern to buy drinks to bring back to give to her customers. And there were lots of Molly houses that were known as Molly houses that were actually brothels, where they would employ boys or young men to be sex workers for the other men that would visit these establishments. And depending on who you ask, she was accused of running a brothel, but there are lots of anecdotes from that time that suggest that that's not her intent. She was more or less trying to run a social club where dudes would bang.
Huh. But what is a brothel but a social club where you can bang, though? Like,
yeah,
but drawing that line seems very tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so it's interesting, too, because there was this group called the Society for the Reformation of Manners, which I think is fucking hilarious. And they apparently would go and investigate these places and try to raid them and try to get them in trouble and try to get them shut down. And it was more difficult for them to do so in her case because it wasn't a brothel. So like a lot of the like gymnastics that you're talking about, the conceptual wordplay that's going on to make it like, oh, it's not a brothel, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, it is in part just like a defense.
But there is I can very much understand, like, this is one where like laws or definitions don't, the intent behind creating a house that's a space for queer people or queer men to be, that includes sex and drinking and whatever, like, you know, if someone's starting it because they want to do a business with sex, and whether someone's starting it as a place for everyone to get together. But I don't know, that may not be obvious even unless you talk to the owners of that establishment, you know,
right.
you might not even know that.
Yeah. How fun would it be to just go back in time and see what that was like? Like, what was going on inside that house? So she, this is hilarious to me. Like, there should be, if there's not already a fictionalization of this, like a TV show about this, I would watch this fucking movie. That's what I'm saying. So there's a dude named Mark Partridge who was apparently a frequent attendee at Margaret Clapp's place there.
Peacock and Clapp. This sounds fake already.
Yeah, but apparently met somebody there and hooked up with him a whole bunch there, and then he outed him. And in that day, sodomy was potentially punishable by death in English courts. So in order to escape sodomy charges, Mark Partridge became an informant for the police, and he began this 2-year surveillance. Some places say 1 year, some places say 2 years. Surveillance against Margaret Clapp's home. So what would happen is he would bring a policeman into Molly houses. It wasn't just Margaret Clapp's place, but that was one of the places that got targeted. He would bring a policeman with him, introduce him as his husband, so like to legitimize him, and then like take him around and tour this policeman around so that he could see all of the shit that was going down and they could take notes and get evidence gathered. There was another notable informant named Thomas Newton, who frequently used entrapment also to allow constables to arrest men in the act of instigating sodomy. So this went on for a year or two. And then finally, in February of 1726, think about that date, 1726, they raided her house, and around 40 people were arrested. And ultimately, she was found guilty as charged and sentenced to stand in the pillory, which I didn't know very much about this, but like a pillory is like, you know, that stockade thing where you stick your hands through the thing that comes over your head and arms. Yeah. So except you would have to be put in that thing and stand out in a public square for like hours at a time and walk around with that thing attached to you. And then people could come and just like yell at you and throw things at you. Like that.
This is literally the concept of porn videos.
Okay.
I've seen them do that to men, but I think it was more consensual than what you're describing. So.
Yeah. Well, she fainted several times during her pillory sentence, but she was sentenced to stand in the pillory in Smithfield Market, pay a fine of 20 marks and 2 years imprisonment after that.
Wow.
And that's when she like disappears out of the historical record. We don't know what happens to her after she served that sentence.
Where did the clap go? That's wild. Like the risk that you know you're getting into by running that, the deceit, the kind of cover your own ass, ironically, to save yourself and get all these other people arrested. Like, God, that's, I don't know. That's wild, knowing, going into it, not just attending one of those houses, but running the house. 'Cause you know that you're the one that's going to get in trouble if anything happens, but you know, it's the right thing to do where people need these spaces. God, that's wild.
Yeah. Well, talking about these spaces and like what happened in them, there is another fairly famous Molly house that has a lot of documentation about it because it also was similarly rated and lots of people got arrested. But two people were actually put to death for sodomy as a result of all of this stuff. But that provides us, that investigation and that trial provides us with a treasure trove of, in the moment, information about like what it was like inside of these places. Again, in the late 18th, early 19th century. So some of these things that were specific to Molly houses were, number one, quote, the use of female dialect. So apparently a lot of the dudes that would go to these places would use feminine language, refer to each other by she and her, which is not, that's like, that's a thing we do now sometimes.
I did not know it was that old. Yeah.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Sometimes they would come up with fake names for themselves and those names were female. So like there was this like, you know, cultural thing of like, oh, I've decided I'm going to go with Sophia. Yeah. My Molly house name is Sophia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. Cross-dressing. There were a lot of people that would wear female clothes. It's of course controversial to look at that and talk about the difference between, cross-dressing and trans, you know, trans identities did not exist whatsoever, but there's definitely a lot of, you know, wearing of feminine clothing on the inside there. Another one was marriage ceremonies. So sometimes what that meant was just banging. There would be a room that had a bed in it, and that's where you would go to consummate your marriage to another dude. And that was what they meant by marriage ceremony. But sometimes
I now take your dick to be my husband.
Why not? But sometimes they would actually have a wedding ceremony between a Molly and his male lover. And that was... Yeah, it was the opportunity to do like the form, if not the function, of heterosexual romantic relationships. In fact, there was a priest. I'm trying to find him. I can't find his name. There's a priest that was arrested for performing ritual marriage ceremonies between people, between dudes at Molly houses in the 1700s. This was 1810, but still 1810. Fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People who think that the desire for same-sex marriage is a new thing or a new trend. Like all those people that think it's a trend. Man, 1810.
Yep. And the last one, this one I don't get, Kyle.
Okay.
You'll have to maybe tell me what you think about this. They would have mock birth rituals, during which a man dressed in a nightgown pretended to be a woman giving birth to a baby, assisted by fellow Mollies who were his midwives, and then they would go through the agony and ecstasy, that's quote the agony and ecstasy of childbirth, and then he would give birth to a wooden doll, and then they would like present the baby to him, and like it's like one of those scenes from the Margaret Atwood, The Handmaid's Tale. It's like The Handmaid's Tale, except it's a bunch of dudes pretending to be ladies.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get my head around like what were they getting out of it, or what were they thinking about? Because
they'd get a wooden doll, Mike. Come on, you said it.
it's super interesting to me that it was like a coming of age ceremonial, but like not overtly sexual, but kind of.
How is it sexual?
Well, just maybe it's not. I don't know. But like the stuff that I read about it, where they're talking about like pain is ecstasy and childbirth is the most painful thing, so it must be the most ecstatic, was like. It was all intertwined somehow with like an orgiastic feeling to it.
That's childbirth when, you know, anyone with a vagina that can give birth has like, you can potentially have an orgasm when you do it. There's, you know, the something that I'm thinking is not just in this moment, but also the whole idea of these Molly houses is anytime there's any kind of gay sex involved in anything, that's the only thing we take away from it. I was just thinking, like, what's the comparison in the house of that versus frat houses? Frat houses do a bunch of ritualistic behavior, have a bunch of dudes. They refer to each other in specific ways that are custom to their speech. And they have a lot of sex in it. And we don't while that's a part of it, we don't think of them as sex houses. But when gay dudes do it, it's a sex house in spite of all the other functions that it provides. And that what you're saying specifically about this thing of childbirth, I don't know if it was not a bunch of dudes doing this together at a house where like sex also sometimes happens. I wonder if you would think of it as a sex thing if that was, you know, someone else giving birth at a hospital.
Yeah, no, it's a great point that there's a double standard, right? Like just by gay dudes even existing, there's an assumption of sexuality. Like, look at what's going on with like drag queen story time reading. Like, because they're dudes and they have an alternative sexuality, then that presumes that there's something dirty about it, even though they're just being fabulous and reading stories. Get over it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's enough about Molly houses, but I just from in an episode about queer spaces, it's important. Molly houses are important because it is where it stops being about just the sex part and starts going into this idea of community and a place where people can live out alternative identities and be in each other's lives beyond just the dick in the ass kind of a situation.
Interesting.
And I think Ms. Clapp is my new favorite historical figure.
And I mean, something in spite of my heavy eye rolling during your history segments, I do really enjoy what I always learn and what everyone I think needs to learn, especially right wing politicians, is it's happened for not even decades, like hundreds and
centuries,
hundreds of years. And so, yes, it's been happening for so long. And the idea that any of this is new is ridiculous. It's like, I would have never thought that these kind of spaces existed that early.
Yep. Yep. It blows me away too. And I'm glad that you don't hate it as much as you pretend to. So I will wrap up the history part though, by talking about gay bars.
Yeah, you got to talk about gay bars. I mean, it's either when you think about gay spaces specifically, you think about either sex or
bars. So what like how would you what does bar mean to you, Kyle?
I don't want to answer that because it's like, what does the word the mean to me? I don't know. A bar. Yeah.
So what's interesting here is that like the concept of a bar didn't really exist until Industrial Revolution and after that. There were taverns and there were inns and there were places that were either restaurants or places that you stayed or both. And there would be alcohol there, but that was not, at least on the surface, the primary reason for the establishment to exist. Right. So when you talk about gay bars, if we limit it to the bar is a place where people go primarily to drink. It's not about sex. It's not about the food. It's not about sleeping there. It's just to drink and have community. When do you think the very first bar opened that fits that criteria?
1439.
Oh, that's optimistic.
I don't know.
I appreciate you not Mike Johnsoning it and trying to like be smart.
Oh no, I did Mike Johnson it. I went way earlier than I thought was actually realistic because I think you're trying to me to say something and it's actually going to be earlier than I say. So I went to the other side of it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the very first gay bar in Europe and probably in the world was on the French Riviera in Cannes. It was called the Zanzibar. And it opened in 1885. It was specifically a drinking establishment for queer people.
Wait, are the concept of like these gay houses, those Molly houses, are those older than the concept of bars?
Great question. Molly houses came before bars.
Ooh.
Bars for straight people existed before gay bars, but not by much.
Right. Yeah. That's really fun to like, I don't know. That's just like a fun, weird fact. If anyone's like, oh, you need a queer space. It's like, dude, queer spaces are older than the idea of any bar. Like, that's just a fun thing to be able to say. That's like random history knowledge. That's like, fuck off.
Or more importantly, gay bars are older than the word gay. Like they're older than the word homosexual, right? Like that as a identifier, as an identity, didn't come until later.
Of course, our first bar is called Zanzibar.
Zanzibar. Yeah. So apparently Paris was known as a center for gay culture in the 19th century. And
it still is.
The Zanzibar, I was surprised to learn, was open for 125 years. It only closed in December of 2010.
Oh, God.
Which makes
that
me
seems
sad.
Like a, that seems like a should be a historical landmark that like Stonewall. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I wish I could have gone.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, there and also there are a lot of this is hilarious. Fucking drama queens. There are lots of bars in the United States that claim to be the oldest gay bar here.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's things like this bar is in the oldest building. There's like this bar has like it started as a normal bar that was a straight bar and then the gays took it over, but we're going to count the pre-gay portion as part of the like making us the oldest gay bar. There's kind of a lot of them.
Yeah, if you have a chance to try to do it, you got to plant your fag.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. Gay bars have been around for a while. 1885. I was surprised by that. I figured it would be like the 1950s or 1960s, right? And a lot of that's because we think of Stonewall as being this just like gay people jumped out of the ground in the late 60s, and that's just not fucking true.
And I've followed the same kind of pattern of learning about things when you learn about, especially when you're in the U.S. and learn about gay history, you start like Stonewall is such a major important event that you start there. And then it's like, I don't know. It's not often that you go back even further beyond that. So it makes sense that that starts as you're like, oh, it started then, you know, and not know as much about all the things that happened before.
Yeah, for sure. It's really sad to me that there are gay bars, bathhouses, Molly houses, which are somewhere in between, and then like community centers, and a lot of that jumps out of the AIDS crisis, and that's but the lion's share, the vast majority of queer spaces are gay male oriented spaces and are about drinking and fucking. Like that's our legacy, and I think it still is in so many ways, and that's kind of a lot to, I don't know, think about.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, why do you think drinking is so heavily... Like, I get the fucking part. You're not allowed to do that. And there is, although there's more to being gay, like, part of the definition is that you want to fuck dudes. Like, but why drinking? Why is drinking so heavily associated with us? And
I mean, I have my guesses. I have no data here, but like bars are darker, so your identity is sort of like slightly feels safer. If not, like it seems like there's something there. Being gay or being queer, I know I'm braver at sucking dick when I've had a couple of beverages. So like maybe that, you know, take the edge off of the anxiety. That's you know, people, their inhibitions are lowered, and if that's something that they need help with, that's a place that they can do it. There's also at least once you look at Prohibition and beyond, once Prohibition comes into play and alcohol, it's illegal to serve alcohol in several countries, not just the United States, but the United States has had a famous experiment with Prohibition. You have an establishment where people are allowed to come and drink anyway. There's this like, well, if you're going to break one rule, why not break a fuck ton of them? Right. Okay. And so if you're going to step outside the mainstream of society and go be an alcoholic, then like maybe hooking up with other dudes is something that you can swing as well.
You're not going to be like breaking the drinking law and be like, but he's kissing someone. You're like, oh, wait, it's like tattling on someone else that's speeding right beside you. You're like, yes. Wait.
Yeah, exactly right. And bars have this reputation. I think a lot of it comes from Prohibition, actually, that like they're seedy underbellies of society. That's like where the weirdos hang out. And that is something that we've always sort of gravitated to as a people, queer people, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the ownership of especially gay bars, like getting our money is part of why they could exist. And the people that could get the money were like the mafia or people that could then afford to pay off. And so, you know, hanging out at a community center is not going to make the mafia money. Whereas like getting money from us at a gay bar, it makes sense why that would be an establishment that they would keep open.
Yep.
If you're going to break the law,
yeah,
might as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, as we moved into our modern day society, we have then transitioned into online spaces.
Oh yeah, we have.
So the internet first started in 19.
When Al Gore was taking a dump and decided
And he was like, my poop goes through tubes. What if my poop contained information? What I'm going to talk about is GLAAD's 2021 Social Media Safety Index, which took a look at the biggest social media platforms and talked about, are they safe? You kind of know the answer. We talked about it before. No, they're not. But
yeah, I was going to ask if it's just one page in 78 point font. It says don't.
Don't. Yeah, it's true. They said at the very beginning, I wrote down this quote: surveying the current landscape of leading social media platforms, the entire sector is entirely unsafe for LGBTQ users.
Yeah.
Like, if you want the takeaway from what they said, it is that sentence.
Yep.
Part of our, it's funny, part of our sponsorship with the app Spaces is they are an online community made by and for queer people, partly in response to this. So part of the promotion that they are getting from this episode is just the knowledge of what's happening in today's world. you don't have to do too much pushing of them. You just have to say, here's why stuff sucks. And a lot of people know that stuff sucks because they've been there, they've been on the internet, and they understand it. But what I wanted to do is, I read through the report. I thought it'd be interesting to go for each platform, talk about something that jumped out about kind of the particular challenges or issue that platform has had.
Okay.
Oh, just first, the
Craigslist, all the murder. Is that what you're going to do?
Craigslist, all the murder. But boy, you could find some random sex early back in the day. No, things like Reddit and Craigslist are, this is not every internet. At the beginning of the research, 68, this is from Pew Research. They quote a lot of other people and others' research. 68% of LGB people have faced online harassment versus 41% of straight adults. So LGB people are far more likely to be harassed.
Wait, okay. What do straight people get harassed for?
Well, because I think straight people, then
you're
you can
so straight, fucking straighty. Why are you a straighterson?
Probably because of their other identities, people of color or disabilities or religion or their woman or,
All right. You made
I'm
it
guessing.
Sad.
It was okay. Also, the Anti-Defamation League also shows that 64% of LGBTQ people are the target of online hate and harassment. That is consistently the highest group that is the target of hate and harassment. And it was very weird that male identified people were the third highest at 43%. And there's part of me that's like, yeah, is that because of your other identities, or are there men out there that just are like, I'm so harassed.
Being a cishet white able-bodied dude Christian is just, there's so much harassment, Kyle.
I actually tried to look that up because I was like, that's so odd that it's higher than female reported harassment. That's just bonkers. So it's is this just the persecution complex that men have of you responded to me with any kind of comment, this is hate? Totally understand. Anyway, I don't know what that, but anyway, LGBTQ people have far and away faced higher rates of online harassment than straight people. And that's just kind of pervasive. That's kind of expected. It's, two thirds ish of people, you just expect for harassment to happen. And I think the belief that it is just someone says something mean to you or calls you a fag, it goes way beyond that. And part of the GLAAD's survey, they did not rank anyone because they said, if we gave you a score, you would all fail. So basically this, I think, is their warning shot. This is here's our recommendations. Here's what the current status is. And the next report they get put out, which should be, I think, I'm assuming sometime soon, because it's been about a year, the next report should give them scores.
Okay.
That'll be interesting. But let's start with Facebook.
Okay. Fail.
I mean, yes, absolutely. Facebook, just one thing. Again, I'm just kind of picking the thing, a thing about them that stood out most to me. Have you heard of the Daily Caller?
Yes.
I don't know if I had never heard of it, but it's a site that was a quote unquote news site that was started by Tucker Carlson and is very anti-LGBT. And
yeah, I have so many Tuckers in my life, literally That's my great aunt's last name is Tucker. Oh,
anyway, but I thought you meant you hung out with a bunch of drag queens.
Well, no. That too. But like, I grew up in Eastern Washington and I have so many like just conservative fuckface asshole dickbags that I'm either friends with or related to or both. And like, that's why I see Daily Caller stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it is, very right wing, very anti-LGBT.
Great.
Anyway, the reason I bring that up is because Facebook in 2016 started doing independent fact checking of information that was posted. When something was labeled as misinformation, it would appear, it would be less likely to show up on news feeds. It would show a label on it that described it as such. One of the 10 independent fact checkers was the Check Your Fact, which is a for-profit subsidiary owned by the Daily Caller.
Oh my God.
So that is one of their 10 independent fact-checking. And all of this is as of the 2021 social media report. So hopefully things have changed, or I don't know. I kind of have a doubt that things have wildly changed for the better. But at least as of this time, yeah, that was one of their fact checkers.
Okay, that sounds super suspect and sketchy, but I would be more interested in their accuracy, right? Yes, follow the money, and yes, that's a problem. And if they're real good at their job, though, then like maybe that makes it a little more okay, you know?
The group owned by the Daily Caller might be really good at fact checking.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, we should be open to the possibility that that's true.
Gil, I mean, if you can't start with your own website, then why would you? I don't know why you're giving them any kind of credit or hope.
Well, okay.
That's wild to me. It's like
no credit, maybe hope. It's that like the jury is out, is what I'm saying.
Maybe for you, but the jury's not out. No, like an anti-LGBT news site does not get to be a fact checker. I'm not going to wait to decide. Like, I don't need more data. I feel like we get into this trap. It's where it's like, okay, well, let's give you a chance to do a thing. It's like, no, you've already proved you're anti-LGBT. I don't need more information. I don't need to wait for you to fuck up again. I'm allowed to say, no, that's not okay. I don't care. Like, you are not allowed to have an anti-LGBT or a thing owned by an anti-LGBT news site be a fact checker. No.
Right.
Not allowed. Out. You're out.
Done. You're out.
You're
all
out.
The way, May. Strike three. Fuck you.
It was interesting. Facebook itself. Let me see. Hold on.
We should totally start a new site and call it Sit on My Facebook and see how long it takes to get sued.
Surely someone has thought of that. That seems like too good not to be. Facebook's algorithms are also an issue. Oh, Facebook algorithms, quote, fuel extreme and polarizing content. Facebook should do everything in its power to prevent its tools and algorithms from driving people towards self-reinforcing echo chambers of extremism, and that the company must recognize that failure to do so will have dangerous and life-threatening real-world consequences.
Yeah.
And that quote is from Facebook's own civil rights audit from July 2020.
Woo.
So
wait, is that shit that one bitch leaked and then she ended up talking to Congress and then Facebook like lost their shit?
I don't know where.
All right.
Yeah.
Clearly, I know all the facts because I used lots of specific language.
Twitter, they were most positive about Twitter. They said the most like they seemed
weird.
Again, all of them failed. So it is not a good outcome, but that was the one that when you read it was had the most good things to say about them.
I mean, there's so many more dicks on Twitter. That's for sure.
That's very
dicks
true.
And dicks.
got to find those alt accounts. They do have a policy against dead naming, which they were commended for. And actually, since this report, it's the one thing I know about that has happened since this report. TikTok has a policy against dead naming and misgendering that happened this year in February. So,
yeah,
at least something has happened since then. YouTube, this is well known about YouTube that they're roll negative against YouTube and pointed out a lot of negative things that we know about it. YouTube can very much take you down this path of extremism. And this is part of the inherent bias in algorithms that is something that I think is, God, it's such a crazy problem, but also a real one. YouTube and Facebook, and I'm sure others, like recommend things to you based on your interests. So if you look at an anti-LGBT group, whether on Facebook or a video on YouTube, they may serve you. And well, YouTube, they're saying they do serve you even more extreme ones. Mm-hmm. Because if you're kind of my logic, like if you're kind of mad at something and then you see another video that's like, you should be a little bit more mad, then you're like, oh, wait, why should I be? And it like very, it can radicalize you. If you find a group that's anti-LGBT, in the report they pointed out on Facebook, like the Straight Pride group, what other groups does it recommend to you based on that? So even if on the surface something looks like Straight Pride, like that's not explicitly against LGBT people, but what else is it going to show if you like that? And so they are pushing people towards anti-LGBT things.
Gross. So gross.
In 2019, LGBTQ YouTubers filed a lawsuit for discrimination against YouTube because of they say that it blocks words like gay or trans, which with pretty, you know, these YouTubers have done tests and seen this happen pretty directly and posted about it. And the case was, I think we've even talked about it. It was thrown out because I think, unfortunately, correctly thrown out in 2021 because tech companies are not state actors. They are not subject to the First Amendment.
Yep. Yep.
That is something that conservatives love to claim when it negatively affects them and love to utilize when it doesn't. Yep. That's one of the things they like to pretend applies to everything that they feel bad about is the First Amendment.
Yep, for sure. They love the First Amendment. They love the Second Amendment. End of list.
And they love fucking children. This is interesting for YouTube. One of the positives that the GLAAD report mentioned is that YouTube originals have both been nominated and won GLAAD Media Awards.
Oh.
Which it's interesting in a report that says all social media is bad for LGBTQ people, including YouTube, and also GLAAD itself has awarded them for documentaries that, yeah.
What makes a YouTube original a YouTube original? Does it mean that they bankrolled it, they produced it, or does it just mean that it's on their platform? Like, are there independent content creators who get labeled YouTube originals and they're actually applauding them, not YouTube the platform?
I did not look up that definition.
I'm trying to figure out a YouTube way to not give them credit, but still say that
GLAAD YouTube original would be like YouTube made it.
I see a lot of Hulu originals that are actually like British shows. Like they just slapped Hulu original on it. Like, anyway, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was curious your reaction to that.
I'm inclined to trust GLAAD that there's a way to reconcile those seemingly contradictory things that they have said. And that was that's why I'm asking the question that I asked, was to try to figure out a way to make it make sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, so no, that didn't help. So yeah. Now what do you think?
Great.
You have no more opinions about it? No feelings about I had really strong opinions, but I'm very surprised that I'm very surprised. Now I'm more surprised. I was both surprised by this. Now I'm even more surprised that you're like kind of indifferent towards this.
Well, I just like I said, like I'm acting like a Republican. I want to know how to make both things true, that like YouTube is bad for queer people and that this content that they singled out and said is good for queer people is like, instead of viewing it as a potential strike against GLAAD as an arbiter of good queer media, I have a level of trust built up with them that I want to believe both things are true.
Yeah. Do you think something like YouTube categorically that GLAAD has said is bad for LGBT people, should that be eligible to win a GLAAD Media Award?
Yes. No, I don't know. it's a good question, because I think that there is a increased level of scrutiny that's required when it comes to money and following the money and taking a social responsibility for making sure that you're not inadvertently supporting shitty people, right? So I'm very torn because there's like a journalistic integrity involved in like analyzing content and saying like, hey, this is really important and good for queer people and it's good queer representation and like a level of objectivity about that to don't care who did it. Don't care where it came from. It's okay to still really like Kevin Spacey's performances. Yeah. Or is it? Right.
Well, but I think what you're saying, like the idea that you can be objective in your view often then allows for prejudice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, also, you know, I think this report came out after some of those nominations or whatever and awards happened, or I don't know the timing exactly. So it's possible. Yeah. I don't know. How do you recognize the good things that are happening or that it's doing? But at some point, like to award them with this, I feel like companies often then use that to tout that they are doing well. And you can say, oh, well, we have the YouTube original that this documentary won a GLAAD award for our documentary. We're doing good things. And I don't know.
Okay. Oh, this is uncomfortable.
Okay.
We are on Spotify.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. Like, we're on these exact... We're on YouTube. Like, if you want to get more direct about it, we are on these things. Yeah.
Like, there's a marketplace there, right? And how easy is it for Facebook or Spotify or whoever to say, like, there's this gay-ass podcast that we're the home for, blah, blah, blah. Like, that feels gross. And of course a marketing person would do that. Of course they would.
Yeah, yeah. Something that I both for us and other LGBTQ people, we unfortunately don't have any of the power in this situation. We being and other LGBTQ artists, we cannot take ourselves off Spotify and make a difference. The only difference we would make then is we would negatively impact us and we would zero impact Spotify. So there's I think at some point you can talk about if you get to a certain size and can have an influence, and I think you have to be pretty big to have a say. I don't blame any LGBTQ people for being on things like Facebook or YouTube or Spotify, or they are the ones in charge of the market, and you have to be there in order to make money, to promote yourself. I think queer people like get paid. Like we already don't make money. Like we are discriminated against in so many ways, and then to put the extra burden on top of yourself of don't participate in any of the mainstream publishers or marketplaces, like I think that's an unfair expectation. If an independent creator says this is against our views and we're gonna go do our own thing, I respect that. That's really cool. Also, if we did that, we would have 20 listeners, like this is also like I think there are ways for GLAAD to recognize a good documentary that YouTube did without having it win. I think where I'm at right now, and I'm open to change this because I've only been thinking about this the past couple days since I learned this information, but I think where I'm at right now is if YouTube fails as a social media company for LGBTQ people, they are disqualified from winning or being nominated. That is you have to achieve an acceptable level as a whole to win. And GLAAD can do they can special recognition for this thing, or they can promote something on YouTube through their channels that's a good documentary, especially created by queer people. Like they can do other things, but YouTube, you cannot win this or they can like award, I don't know. I think they do other things, but you are disqualified from winning this award until you are a safe place for queer people to exist.
Well, and I wonder if that's the plan. If there are no official scores, then you can't really say what a failing one is. And like if there's some level then of objectivity for next year's, great, right?
Maybe we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what happens. And if any of these companies have gotten their shit together enough by the next one to not fail, because right now they're all failing, or what happens. To keep going, Instagram. I think the biggest thing they pointed out is right-wing people will report an Instagram account for no reason. It will get taken down and maybe restored later, but this is where the transparency and like, why was my thing taken down? Or you can just, if you just get enough people together to do a thing and attack a group of people, you can get your way. So they pointed out some examples of that. And something I didn't realize is there are hashtags that are allowed that are directly anti-LGBT. And I looked this up.
Really?
One that stood out to me, they pointed out a bunch. One that stood out to me, gay is a mental disorder. That hashtag is both.
That's not okay. Okay.
I pulled up my phone and opened up Instagram and did a search and I see posts there. I reported a post from our gayish account that used that and was posted this month, had a dude like with the American flag covering him, kicking a dude with a rainbow flag covering him. And so I reported that. We'll see if that gets removed. But like that's a good example of like, can you just not allow gay as a mental disorder? Like that's just, right. I don't know.
That's okay. I'm very disturbed by that. Like I'm very disturbed by that.
Why that one specifically?
Because it's simultaneously ableist and bigoted. Like that's it's an impressive concoction of evil bullshit. Like it just, yeah. Anyway.
So, okay. Speaking of, we're not going to have time for this. So this is going to be on the Patreon segment. I'm going to tell you about Glad mentioned part of hate speech can also come in the form of memes or something that appears to be on the surface level, a concept or a word or a definition, but is actually hate speech. One of them, globo homo, is a very interesting combination of homophobic and anti-Semitic that I'd never heard of. And if I saw that word, I wouldn't have known what that is. But we'll talk about words like transgender or clover gender or other words and memes that I think would help people to know that they exist. So when you run into them, because like I want to be open to new concepts, ideas, identities, things I don't know and learn about them. And if someone masks information at trying to promote hate and puts it in this mask or guise, then my openness, they're taking advantage of my openness to learn and want to learn new things. So anyway, we'll talk more about some of those concepts on the Patreon segment.
Okay.
Lastly on the TikTok, that was
the TikTok.
On TikTok, there were certain accounts that TikTok found were more vulnerable to be bullied, primarily LGBTQ people, people with disabilities. And to help resolve that, TikTok reduced the viral circulation of their posts. They slowed down their posts from going viral. And that's horrible. Like they are punishing LGBT disabled content creators for their posts rather than, you know, so they said they stopped doing that in December 2019. So that was something that they had done in the past. And they also, as recently as September 2020, were shadow banning LGBTQ hashtags, especially ones that meant the word gay in Russian languages, Arabic, Bosnian languages, as a way to kind of hammer the illegality or try to match country laws. But not only, I don't know, we can talk about that. That's difficult. And also some of those that can affect people that speak those languages that are in other countries, not just in the countries where it is illegal.
Yeah.
And shadow banning is particularly difficult because it's a ban or a hiding something and they don't tell you it's hidden. So when you're shadow banned, right. You think you're just posting. And that's the shadow part of it, is like it's hidden from the rest of the world and no one can see it. And nothing alerts you to like, hey, your post has been blocked or won't show up or it's removed. It just, no one sees it. And you would just think, oh, like no one voted this or liked this or anything. You just, on your end, you just see a post.
Well, rate, review, subscribe, and recommend, everybody, because we've for sure been shadow banned.
So I will wrap up this online segment with, we have not talked about, but is a big part of this, is the idea, the balance between protection for communities versus freedom of speech. And a quote that I grabbed that I really liked from this report said, "While the tension between hate speech and free speech is one of the most persistent dilemmas of our time, the fact that remains that social media companies actively exploit this tension with the sole purpose of reaping enormous profits every single day. as the disproportionate targets of that hate, LGBTQ people and other marginalized individuals are the ones paying the price.
Yeah. Yep. So Kyle. Hey, Kyle.
Oh, hey, Mike.
On my notes, I just have the sentence, do we need queer spaces still? And so let's talk about that.
Yeah.
There's this thing, especially in Seattle, that says, you know, we've reached critical mass. Like, gay people are fucking everywhere, and we're more or less super safe and visible and mainstream in most parts of this city. So are gay bars and other queer spaces going to die by virtue of not really even being needed anymore? And Seattle's a bubble, super liberal, super crazy left. It is not the way that it is in lots of other parts of the country, but are we like on the leading edge of a death of queer spaces that's going to happen? What do you think? Respond.
Boy, I feel like I'm getting interviewed on my own podcast. Okay, well, should I tell you some of the numbers?
Let's do that. Yeah.
Okay. I grabbed this data from the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, which that sounds misleading. It's just in general about kind of LGBT stats. And hold your breath, everybody. This is going to be depressing for a hot second. you're going to pass out. Oh, I guess then I can just do the rest of the podcast on my own.
I have COVID. I can't hold my breath that long.
Okay, here we go. LGBT, this is mostly us. LGBT people are still four times more likely to experience violence than straight people. 2019 FBI data says there was a rise in anti-LGBT hate crimes, including higher rates of police brutality. 2020 had a record-breaking number of murders against trans people, and trans people are seven times more likely to be victims of police brutality than cis people.
Jesus.
70% of LGBTQ people said they have been sexually harassed at work. 42% of LGBT people reported living in an unwelcome environment, and that's just in the U.S. So this is not from that place, but I looked up a worldwide number because I was very U.S.-centric. But worldwide, there has been an overall increase in acceptance in LGBT people, according to the Global Acceptance Index. But there are still 57 countries where the acceptance has decreased.
Oh. Huh.
LGBT people.
Anyone's we care about, though.
Bow, 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 bow.
Also, 70% of people, of LGBT people, have been harassed at work.
Yeah.
I haven't. What am I doing wrong? Am I not attractive enough?
I'll message you later to see if you want to keep that comment in this episode.
Okay, great.
LGBT people are overburdened because they are felt like they need to educate or make others feel okay with their mere presence or deal with questions about their sex, sexuality, or gender. For example, 33% of trans patients reported that they had to teach their doctor about trans issues in order to receive appropriate care. I know I've had to teach my therapist about LGBT stuff. And I mean, even just day to day, you say you're gay and now, like, are you top or bottom? Or I don't know.
That's so insane to me that, like, there's part of me that wants to view doctors as just being super smart and to, like, know stuff. And the fact that they just flat fucking don't about a lot of things is really crazy to me, especially because my doctor is so good. He's a straight dude, but like he's knowledgeable and totally down. And that's probably just a function of him being a doctor in the tech part of Seattle. But anyway,
All of this, if you add to this, trans, bisexual, asexual, black people, people of color, anyone in the plus of the LGBTQ plus, intersex, anyone who's femme, also experience additional hate from within the community, which is additional burden. And it's interesting, at the end of kind of all these stats, this page said, quote, "The awareness of the above statistics is extremely taxing on LGBTQIA plus individuals." So even me reading the numbers about why it's difficult being LGBT person is a reminder that it's difficult to be an LGBT person. Straight people don't have constant reminders about, hey, things are even worse than you. So it's both validating, like, we're two times more likely to have mental health issues. Also, we hear that all the time about how we're more likely to have mental health issues. Like, so... Yeah. I think anyone who wonders if we still need queer spaces needs to just just because you have felt things have improved, or you have personally not felt anything or experienced anything, even if you're a member of the community, like, that is great. You're very fortunate. Also, that's not the general experience. And there's still a lot of challenges that come along with being queer and and existing in the world can lead to anywhere from invasive questions to death. And queer spaces exist from a need to be not, you'll never be 100% confident that where you are is safe, but you are existing in a queer space can remove some of that pressure or fear or burden or expectations or danger from your experience.
Okay, but do we need more than drag shows, two for one shots, brunch, and glory holes?
Yes.
Yeah.
What I've seen is, I mean, especially because of the pandemic, there's been a big decrease in the number of available spaces, but also recently I've seen the desire to increase the number of spaces for sober LGBT people, disabled, women and non-binary and femme people, spaces for Black people or people of color. In Seattle, there's Taking Black Pride, which even, I think it was last year, experienced hate from the LGBT community on, do you need a space for Black LGBT people?
Yeah.
Like, so I'm also heartened by, I think we're having more of these discussions about the needs for spaces that go beyond the sex and the drinking parts.
Was that the one where the controversy was that white people had to pay more? Like, just get over it. Like,
fucking get over it. I also pretty sure it was optional. Like, I don't think they, I don't know. It was like, I don't know. Even if it wasn't, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, if you're, I mean, that there is a part that's, I mean, we are on both sides of this. We can see this from both sides. Should allies be allowed in a space? And I mean that straight cis people coming into a queer space, or, you know, us going to a Black queer space, or a, you know, whatever. Like, should allies be allowed in a space?
I think that it is a matter of invitation, right? Like, invading a space is different than being brought into one. Mm-hmm. And that it's, should I be allowed to bring my cishet friends with me to an event or a bar or whatever? Abso-fucking-lutely.
Yeah.
And am I going to go to a space that's for people of color or for lesbians or for, like, insert adjective here?
Yeah.
Probably not without a reason or an invitation or an escort, you know, like, that's, I think that's the rule. That's the bar that people should try to follow.
Yeah. I also think when you, I definitely agree. I think especially being queer, like, especially compared to so many other communities, because when I was in college, my best friend was a straight woman, and I was most comfortable. I was really worried about coming out and being gay, and I would bring her to gay bars because I want to feel comfortable for myself. I wanted to bring my best friend.
Yeah.
And so I completely agree that it's really important. Like, that invitation, I am bringing her because this is what I want. And this place, this space, is about making me feel comfortable, and I want to bring my friend into this space. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
From the other side, if you are in a space that you belong in and looking and thinking someone doesn't belong, I think what's really important, especially these days, what are you assuming about that person? And do you know for sure it's true? Because I think, especially with bisexual or pansexual people, gender, with disabilities, we're also doing better at having conversations about, you cannot see those things.
Yeah.
I just think even someone who's questioning, even if they self-identify as, you know, an ally or, you know, straight and cis, and they're coming to space, the idea that it may not be safe for someone to be out, or they may not even be out to themselves, I think we need to really keep in mind if and when we step in to try to prevent or police a space from someone who we feel like doesn't belong. And I think that should happen when someone's not being respectful of the space.
Yeah. It's about disruption, right? Be honest with yourself about how disruptive is this person. Like, just because they're wearing Carhartts and Oakley sunglasses doesn't mean that they're a straight dude. But if they are, like, yelling loudly about NASCAR, like maybe then
here's your sign.
just how disruptive are they being? Because know how much projection you're doing, maybe.
Yeah. Is the end goal, is the ideal state to not have queer spaces?
I think the ideal state is a world in which we have straight bars, gay bars, and just hangout bars, right? Like I think that there is a utility to being pretty sure that everybody around you is eligible. And I think that will always exist, right? I think that there will always be a, like, let's just cut, like, I want to avoid the awkward conversation of, are you even remotely into dudes? And to be pretty reasonably sure, because of the space that we're in, I think there'll always be a use for that.
I love that you're like, no, we always need them, because I want to be reasonably sure I have the potential to fuck.
Yeah. Because I do think that, like, a lot of the justifiable reasons for needing queer spaces now are based in a lack of true acceptance in mainstream society, right? Like, it's dangerous. It is, we need to not feel quite so conspicuous. So there has to be like a secluded area to fly under the radar together in. Like, it's about being certain that the people that are around you aren't harboring ill will. Like, all of that just comes from people still giving a shit about sexuality in a bad way. And if that goes away, in a perfect world where, like, we're not fighting just for our right to exist in a visible way and be who we are, a lot of that goes away, right? So I hope that we don't actually need spaces just to be safe and exist in 100 years.
Yeah.
But we probably will.
Yeah, to me it's more, people will always value being around people that understand their experience. There's always going to be something unique and not the majority about being queer, about being gay or trans, or, you know, all these other identities, but, like, there's always going to be something unique and atypical in society about that. And we like to come together with people that are like us. Same reason there's religion, or same people get together for sports to, like, watch a football game. We're all doing this thing together. So I think in an ideal world, we will have all these spaces, and we will. Yeah. What if we came together for joy and community instead of for fear and respite? Like, I think there's both going on in there. I don't think it's all one. And it's just, I wish the scales tipped all the way towards, hey, this is a community of other people that are like me. And it's interesting. I did a little bit of, like, looking up, like, why do we need queer spaces? Just reading kind of what people said. And so many of the things I expected to look up and find, like, more of this kind of data, like, we need queer spaces because your ex more likely to, or blah, blah, blah. But it was almost sad how many people were just like, I want a queer space because I want to just breathe easier for a second. I want to go to a place where I am actively and loudly being celebrated. I want a queer space because microaggressions just are just constant and daily, and I get to not have to deal with that. So many of people talking about why they needed queer spaces were just, and I've talked about it too. Like, I'm so often, especially after the pandemic, reminded, I go into, like, a gay bar and I'm just like, there's just a weight off my shoulder that I kind of forget is there all day, every day. That's just like, oh God, this is so nice. Just to, like, take a break and a breath.
Okay. Also, I've been doing the local gay bar review because I'm traveling a fucking fuck ton and I'm in all of these random ass places. A single, alone gay person in a queer space is a great way to feel ignored and invisible, right? Like, it's not like it's this magical, heartwarming, big hug, let's hold hands and traipse through the street doing a musical number together, the kind of an environment. It's just not.
Yeah.
So, is actually doing that? I can't imagine. Like, I'm not perfectly outgoing. I'm not a, like a hurricane of social energy, but I know that I'm above average in that. Like my, like talk to strangers and just be brave and inject myself into conversations. I'm above average in that. And it's still a struggle to fit in and meet people and make friends and not be alone in a queer space in a strange city. I can only imagine for somebody who was less skilled than I, how isolating and alone and miserable it might be to be there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are we romanticizing this queer space that exists as this beautiful Valhalla that like isn't actually true?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I especially notice that and think to, I don't always do something, but I think this to myself when I'm there with friends and I see someone else sitting alone is like, man, you took the risk. You're going there. And I personally, I'm like, I don't want to talk. Like, my goal is not go out and talk to randos because they're sitting alone. But like, that's my goal. Like, I wanted to come hang out with my friends. So how much do I owe it to other people to go and talk to them and say hi? Also, if I do that, am I opening myself up to now like look like I can you do that and make it clear it's a friendship? I'm just saying hi. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I think you're right that there are still challenges that it is not you walk in and every fear is alleviated. Also, it takes away a big part of some fears. Yeah. Like, I walk alone other times and feel uncomfortable, so at least I don't have the gay part break me down. So
it beats being alone and invisible at a straight bar. That's for goddamn sure. So like, I'm with you there.
No, and you're right. Like, because of the issues that like racism within the gay community, there's part of it that, you know, we can talk about walking in and being like, oh, it's such a relief. You know, people with disabilities, like,
yeah,
that they may not get that same kind of full relief that we kind of get of like, oh, cool, I can now just be myself. And it's like, well, if you're Black, can you just totally expect to have all of those fears lifted? And maybe not. So, God, queer space is also, not only are they dwindling, but like they need to get better and be more welcoming. And wow, it's interesting. You're right that like thinking about just the single, let's just pretend, single cis white gay man walking in.
Are you going to talk about my weekend? Go.
Yeah, I guess so. Like walking in alone to a gay bar is like, that's a hard thing. Maybe. And that's why we drink. That's why there's alcohol there, I think. To get the courage to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you want to join a queer space.
All right. So I know they're sponsoring the episode and that makes it weird. And like, just to be super transparent, I realize that that's part of why I'm asking, but I'm genuinely interested. I have an Android device. I can't be in Hornet spaces. I don't know what the gayish space is like. What's it like? What's going on there?
Oh, it's cool. Fun. Okay, no, vibrant. It's young. It's
shut your fucking mouth, Kyle.
Gayish is one of the biggest spaces in it. I found another space that's bigger. It's like a bear community. And I was like,
great.
Those bears, they always need to one up us. I don't know, especially people talking about episodes. I post that when it comes out. We've been having recent conversations, especially about like queer as folk and cinema and representation. And I don't know, there are hundreds of people in there. And I don't know, there's also a lot of different like other podcasts. You know, they've been working closely with podcasts. There are a bunch of other podcasts. I think another one of the biggest ones is the MCU, the Marvel Universe. Like, there are like the queer version of almost anything, not just like this gay ass podcast. So it is kind of nice to find other spaces that are like, we get that we're queer. We don't need to do, we're like, but we're all now queer people talking about this other interest that we have. So I don't know. Hmm. Why don't you, listener, join in and find out? I don't know how to do the artful bridge between talking about it and not doing a ad read right now.
You did it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Did we do it?
You know, I have a lot more to, I, yeah.
What?
No, oh, I don't know. What? I'm feeling weird about this episode. So I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you feel weird about every episode.
Okay. Do you want to take a break?
Let's take a break. and go to the queer space that is my bathroom.
This is the part where Mike and Kyle take a break.
So are we back?
We're back.
We're back.
Definitely ready. Face at the mic. We are going to do our gayest straightest.
We're going to do our gayest straightest, but first, tonight, happy hour for Pride, Thursday, June the 20-something.
Third.
Thursday, June the 23rd at 6 p.m. Pacific, we are having our Pride happy hour. There is a link on our Facebook page, and it'll be on all of our socials. It's on Zoom. Come hang out. Spell come.
Yep. We do have quarterly Patreon happy hours, but this is for everyone, anyone. Invite your friends. Pride is often seen as being in a bar or being in a physical place.
I thought you were going to say harness.
Being in a harness. I mean, wouldn't be wrong. And it doesn't have to be. There's plenty we can do from home. And this is one of the ways that you can hang out and celebrate Pride and be gay together.
Yeah. Come do it. Also, our website is gayishpodcast.com.
Our socials on the horrible places.
Yeah. All the places you should not be.
YouTube. At gayishpodcast or .com/gayishpodcast.
Our hotline, you can send us text messages or leave us voicemails, is 5855-GAYISH. That's 585-542-9474. Standard rates apply.
Our email is gayishpodcast@gmail.com.
And our physical mailing address is Post Office Box 19882, Seattle, Washington, 98109.
And join our spaces on Spaces by downloading Spaces and go to the gayish Spaces. It's Spaces. Did we hit our... They didn't give us... Spaces.
Yeah.
Spaces. Download, get Spaces. Spaces.
Great. Yeah. At 25, 30 cents a piece, you're doing real good for us to say all those. Before we do our guest straightest, I'm going to do the local gay bar review. So I've been doing all of this traveling, and I've committed to going to at least one gay bar in all of these places and just talking about them briefly. And I was in Atlanta, Georgia all week.
Ooh.
And, okay, Kyle.
Okay.
How do I feel about Go-Go Boys?
You love them and giving them money and touching them and talking to them.
Yeah. And that makes you uncomfortable, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently there was a bar called Swinging Richards in Atlanta, Georgia, that was a full frontal nudity strip club, Go-Go Boy bar. And it has unfortunately closed. It did not survive COVID. The only one that I could find that was open that seemed even roughly similar was called, and I'm not making this up, BJ Roosters. I went to BJ Roosters in Atlanta, Georgia, and I had
BJ Roosters. I can't. You know what? Sometimes you just got to go for it. Okay.
I had a glorious time, and I went there not once, not twice, but three times.
Wow.
So I first went there on Tuesday night, and on Tuesday night, the Go-Go Boys outnumber the patrons. There were like seven or eight Go-Go Boys, and there were like six of us at the bar drinking, and it was great. And I was like, okay, so it's a Tuesday, but it's like it's as seedy as you would expect. It's super dark. There's a massive ass bar, and there's like one Go-Go Boy on the bar that may or may not be on his phone instead of dancing. Like it is that kind of joint. The ATM charges like $8 to get cash out. You know, that kind of thing is happening. And but then I went back on Wednesday, and I had to work all week, so like I couldn't. The bars don't close in Atlanta until 3, which is fucking ridiculous. Ooh. If you ask me. And the dancing starts at 9. I went on Wednesday and started hanging out with a Go-Go Boy named Atlas. He was adorable.
Was he indifferent? Did he shrug?
Yeah, he had an Ayn Rand tattoo, which is weird because not attractive. Anyway. He asked me if I wanted to go to the VIP room, and I'm like, nothing happens in the VIP room. And I was like, okay, how much is that? He's like, $20 for a lap dance? I was like, I have a $20 bill. Sure. You have this. And he gave me a lap dance and then like full on like starts making out with me. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that that's not a requirement. Like, maybe you're just into this. And that was very interesting. So I was having an existential crisis about like this go-go boy made out with me. But I was like, I need to go home. I have to work in the morning. It's like midnight. This has been lovely. Goodbye. Then I went back on Thursday and I met, I think his name was Starling, was his go-go boy name. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Same basic thing of like, hey, let's go to the VIP room after hanging out and talking. And like, I pit him and blah, blah, blah. And starts making out with me. And then he's like, he said, so here's the consent moment. Can I get rough with you? Mm. I was like, okay. He like pushes me against the wall and fucking bites me. He bit me.
Wow.
Like, I already showed you. I don't know why I'm moving the mic. This is not being on video recorded. Like, but like, you can see individual teeth marks. There's like six marks of like the spaces between his teeth on my neck. He fucking bit me. And so I got bit by a go-go boy. And now everybody on Discord is like, you're going to turn into a weir stripper. And I'm like, that would be great.
Oh my God. If that's not a Twilight spinoff, was that actual consent? Did you actually feel like you consented to that?
If I knew that there was going to be physical evidence on my body of doing this, especially when I'm dating somebody.
Yeah.
No, probably not. And
there's a lot saying rough. Can I get rough? There's a lot. I don't know that gives blanket anything that I do from now on is. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Starling.
Yeah. Big old dick. So that's a bonus for that.
And then his dick bit me too. Okay.
Anyway, that's it. Local Gay Bar Review, BJ Roosters. If you are like me and you like just seedy as fuck, give cash to people and make magic happen, it is a good, good place to go. Enjoy.
What's your score? Is there a score you're giving it?
I give it 4.5 dildos.
You're going to give it like 6 tooth marks.
Yeah. Right here. Right there.
Right there.
Let's do our gayest and straightest.
Great. I will go. My gayest is my late night browsing recently has been very gay. I started listening to Glee songs on YouTube. I had to research how much each of the Kardashians' net worth is.
Oh, nice.
I've been going down some gay rabbit holes at night.
Yeah.
My straightest is I've been trying to change from doing like the artificial sweetener kind of thing. So I used to get like vanilla flavored creamer to just like half and half and going from like something like vanilla and sweet and tasty to like just the basic bland is my straight.
Yeah. Yeah. There is something like less vanilla makes it straighter. You're correct about that. Yeah.
What about you?
Well,
I think you told me a lot of gay things that you've been up to.
Yeah. The gayest thing about me this week, though, at least the one that I wrote down, was on my way back to BJ Roosters on Thursday, I got an Uber and I got in and the Uber driver was like, where are you headed tonight? And I was like, you know, to the place you're taking me.
The destination mentioned in the map.
But then he was like, oh, yeah, what kind of a place is it? And I like hemmed and hawed a little bit. And then finally, I just kind of like stopped. I said, OK, so I'm gay and it's a strip club. Like, but before I could get out the it's a strip club, I said, I'm gay. And he goes, well, I got that. Thanks, Uber driver.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So just too gay to not be recognized by the Uber driver. And the straightest thing about me this week was the next day I took an Uber downtown so that I could go visit the state capitol. And I had a full conversation about his Dodge Charger that we were riding around in. I was like, how do you like your Dodge? What's the motor in it? Like, I don't know. Anyway, he's just,
what's the motor in it?
Yeah. Yeah. The Dodge Charger talk, very straight.
Yep, absolutely. I have a listener one from Spaces. I grabbed the straightest online shopping hauls during quarantine. Her gayest was exclusively shopping in the men's or androgynous sections.
Yeah.
So we'll make one last plug. Spaces has been one of our biggest supporters and sponsors now. So we really appreciate them, especially as independent queer creators. It really helps us to get that kind of support. So join us by downloading, go to search on your iPhone for Queer Spaces or Hornet Spaces. Download the app and join the gayish space.
Yeah, do it. And a thank you to Margaret Clapp for running that Molly House
Mama
in the early
Clapp.
1700s.
Damn, yeah. And thank you to the following modern day Mama Claps, I will say, our super cat bridgers, Stephen Porch. Hi, Stephen.
Hey,
welcome.
Girl.
Yo Stossel, boy, I almost forgot. Harry Shaw, Josh Copeland, Forrest Nell, Patrick Martin, Anonymous, James Barrow, Steve Douglas, Explosive Lasagna, Christopher Farrell, Just Jamie, Kevin Henderson, Tipsy McStumbles, Donald Linsky, Thomas B. Dusty Sanzi, Coleman, Chris Kachaturian, Jerome York, and Steven and Javi. Thank you for your support. We love you. We appreciate you. We care about you.
Yeah, thank you. That's it. This has been Gayish from the Chris Kachaturian Studios. I'm Mike Johnson.
I'm Kyle Getz. Until next week, be butch, be fabulous, be you. See ya, bye.
See ya, bye.
Facebook has done things where they put in an update or feature that helped people, that improved people's experience, made their lives better, and then decided to stop doing it because it limited their numbers and their revenue.
Yeah.
These businesses have no need to, their goal is to make money. That is their number one goal. And I think what Glad is doing a good job of is putting the pressure on their long-term revenue is at risk if enough people get angry about this and start boycotting and calling them to change and leave the platform and all that stuff. So it's still going to be about revenue at the end of the day, but it's going to be that long-term revenue that will help encourage them to change and improve.
Adam Smith's invisible hand, Kyle. You're like pro-capitalism now, apparently.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not pro. I'm stating what capitalism is. I'm just defining their goals. Like, that is their entire intent. No, conservatives are the ones that hate capitalism because whenever the gas prices go up, they're like, what? Why? And it's like, bro, literally capitalism.
Yeah.
No one wants to work anymore. No, capitalism. No
right,
one
right.
raise how much you pay people. Like,
yeah.
For people that love capitalism, again, just like everything, they hate it when it doesn't work for them.
Right. Yep. Selfish pricks. Okay.
Yeah, fuck you.